In the shadow of Big Ben, Jeremy Thorpe cut a dazzling figure in 1960s British politics. With his velvet-collared cashmere overcoats, Savile Row suits, and trademark brown bowler hat, he wasn't just another politician, he was a spectacle. The youngest party leader in Parliament at just 36, Thorpe possessed an almost supernatural gift for remembering constituents' names, their children's ages, and their personal concerns years after meeting them. This charisma propelled him to leadership of Britain's Liberal Party, where he promised to lead as ruthlessly as Lloyd George. Yet beneath this carefully crafted public persona lurked dangerous secrets. In an era when homosexuality remained a criminal offense, Thorpe confided to fellow MP Peter Bessel over dinner in the near-empty members' dining room, "Peter, we're nothing but a pair of old queens." He admitted being 80% gay, a revelation that could instantly destroy his political career if made public. What made Thorpe truly remarkable was his clinical ability to compartmentalize his life. He could transition seamlessly from charming rural voters to coldly calculating the elimination of threats to his career. This psychological duality would eventually lead to his spectacular downfall when his most dangerous secret, a young stable hand named Norman Joseph, refused to remain hidden. It began with a postcard. After Princess Margaret's 1960 engagement, Thorpe sent a provocative message to his friend Brecht von de Vater, expressing romantic interest in members of the royal household. This correspondence would eventually reach Norman Joseph, a young stable hand in von de Vater's employment, initiating what would later be called the Trial of the Century. When Joseph experienced emotional distress after discovering von de Vater's misuse of his identity, he sought assistance from Thorpe. Under the pseudonym Peter Freeman, Thorpe arranged for Joseph to stay at his mother's residence in Oxted, where an inappropriate relationship developed, creating a complex dynamic of dependency and influence. The situation grew increasingly complicated as Joseph, who later changed his name to Norman Scott, struggled with mental health challenges. Following the loss of his beloved pet, he experienced severe depression and threatened to reveal details about his relationship with Thorpe. Though Scott provided authorities with a comprehensive statement about their interactions, the investigation was redirected to intelligence services, demonstrating the establishment's tendency to protect its own. This pattern of institutional protection continued as Scott's allegations increased and Thorpe's political position became increasingly vulnerable. Peter Bessel became entangled in Thorpe's schemes after seeing Scott's 17-page letter to Thorpe's mother detailing their relationship. Though he warned Thorpe against pursuing libel like Oscar Wilde had, Bessel found himself managing the Scott situation. In Dublin, rather than following Thorpe's instructions to threaten legal action, Bessel paid Scott £5 and convinced him to stay in Ireland, becoming the intermediary between them. Bessel's position was complicated by financial dependency on Thorpe. Facing bankruptcy, he received £5,000 from Reverend Timothy Beaumont to save his parliamentary seat, and later another £15,000. This created a power dynamic that made refusing Thorpe difficult. His transformation from respected businessman to conspirator shows how proximity to power can erode principles, each compromise making the next easier until political loyalty and debt had made him an unwilling accomplice. "It's no worse than shooting a sick dog," Thorpe told Bessel about eliminating Norman Scott. What began as political embarrassment over a missing national insurance card had escalated to murder plots that threatened Thorpe's career. At London's Carlton Club, Thorpe's chilling yes to Bessel's question about murder, followed by a whiskey, marked a dark turn. "If Scott goes to the papers, everything I've worked for is finished," he declared. Drawing from crime novels, Thorpe detailed disposal options: concrete-weighted bodies in the channel, burial under motorways, or his preferred choice, Cornwall's abandoned tin mines, where acid water would destroy evidence. The plot advanced through David Holmes, Thorpe's Oxford friend, who recruited debt-ridden pilot Andrew Geno Newton for $10,000. The assassination attempt on Exmoor in October 1975 failed when Newton, after shooting Scott's Great Dane, Rinka, found his gun allegedly jammed while targeting Scott, leaving him alive to expose the conspiracy. Andrew Newton sold his story to the Evening News for $3,000 after his 1977 prison release, declaring, "I was hired to kill Scott." While the Exmoor incident had been dismissed as the Great Dane mystery, Scott had immediately named Thorpe to police. Bessel, facing financial troubles, fled to California. Holmes visited him there, securing a false letter about Scott's alleged blackmail. Bessel later learned Newton had been promised $10,000 for Scott's murder. As media pressure intensified, Bessel broke. He confessed to the Daily Mail and later told the BBC, "Jeremy persuaded David Holmes to hire Andrew Newton to murder Norman Scott." On August 4, 1978, Thorpe was charged with conspiracy to murder, an unprecedented charge for a sitting MP. Holmes, George Deacon, and John LeMessurier were co-defendants. The conspiracy unraveled through Newton's greed, Scott's persistence, and Bessel's confession, proving that even powerful figures couldn't keep such secrets buried forever. At the 1979 Old Bailey trial, Judge Joseph Cantley starkly contrasted men of hitherto unblemished reputation with what he termed a crook, a fraud, and a sponger. This trial of the century exposed deep flaws in British justice. Defense barrister George Carman kept Thorpe from testifying while methodically undermining prosecution witnesses. Bessel admitted to being amoral and a hypocrite, while Scott was portrayed as an unstable fantasist. The appointment of 68-year-old Sir Joseph Cantley, selected by Thorpe's associate Lord Chancellor Elwin Jones, raised immediate concerns about establishment bias. When the jury returned not guilty verdicts, Thorpe claimed complete vindication, while Scott's assertion that the establishment would look after their own resonated with a skeptical public. The trial's contrasting treatment of Oxford-educated Thorpe and working-class Scott revealed a two-tier justice system. Though Thorpe escaped conviction, the proceedings exposed establishment favoritism and catalyzed future institutional reforms. Thorpe's acquittal proved pyrrhic. He lost his Amnesty International directorship amid public outcry and spent his final years at home with Parkinson's disease until his death in 2014. The scandal's players met varied fates. Peter Bessel died of emphysema in 1985, believing in an establishment cover-up. David Holmes, abandoned by Thorpe, faced public disgrace after a 1981 arrest and died of cancer in 1990. Norman Scott lived quietly in Devon with his animals, outliving most antagonists, a vindication for the man whose credibility was once attacked. The affair transformed post-decriminalization Britain, exposing and helping dismantle deep-seated prejudices. For the Liberal Party, it proved devastating, crippling its momentum through the 1980s. The case marked the end of establishment cover-ups, as evidence surfaced of buried police complaints, Home Secretary intervention, and metropolitan police efforts to discredit Scott, revealing systemic protection of the powerful. Modern political scandals trace their roots to the Thorpe affair, which reset public accountability standards. This quintessentially English scandal exposed timeless truths about power's corruption, while demonstrating how truth emerges, sometimes through the unlikely pairing of a Great Dane named Rinka and a determined stable boy.